Call this meeting of the House Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. A quorum is present. Representative Lee, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from March 22nd, 2023?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move approval of the minutes.
Representative Lee moves the minutes from March 22nd, 2023. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. The purpose of this meeting will be to get a walkthrough of the DE1 amendment and spreadsheets and public testimony. No action will be taken except for to move the minutes. The deadline to submit amendments to the DE electronically to the committee administrator, who is Mr. Strohmeyer, is 7 p.m. on Tuesday, March 28th, 2023. Amendments will be posted shortly after. That's today. Tomorrow, the committee will take member questions, mark up the bill, and vote. Representative Hansen, please present the DE1 amendment to House File 2310.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The DE1 amendment for the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill is really a comprehensive proposal. It's a proposal that corrects past wrongs, it lays a foundation and recognizes the present and prepares for the future. There are topics in here that we have discussed for many years that it provides solutions for. Problem solving is the name of this bill. Problems that have been unaddressed for a long period of time because we could not find agreement in the legislature. So in this bill, you will find solutions for dealing with chronic wasting disease, for emerald ash borer, for polyfluoroalkyl alkaline substances, for aquatic invasive species. So I'm trying to think of all of the acronyms. I think we've got CWD, EAB, PFAS, and AIS. They're all in here, as well as multiple other things. We looked at the governor's proposal, and we've included many of it. We provide funding for operating increases for our public employees and our agencies. That is in here. Because we did not have much for a target to continue, we emphasized and invested in our employees who make the state work. There are little targets beyond that, so one-time money we try to extend and make the best use of it. I would encourage you to look through the bill. It has several articles, and with that, I would turn to Ms. Taylor and to give a summary of the corrections and then Mr. Hagemeyer for the spreadsheet.
Ms. Taylor.
Madam Chair, we'd actually prefer if Mr. Hagemeyer started.
No problem. Mr. Hagemeyer.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'll be going through the spreadsheet everyone should have in their packets. It's titled Environment Natural Resources Finance, HF 2310 DE1. The bottom right corner should be date and time stamp 327 at 11:05 a.m. Generically speaking, on the spreadsheet, you'll see the left-hand side, either the various change items or funds it comes from. The first three columns in black boxes are the governor's recs for 22-23. There's a couple little changes, and then 24-25, the current biennium that we're budgeting for, 26 and 7, and then the last of the small boxed columns is the chair's DE1 for the changes in 23. There's a couple that I'll mention, and then the main set of boxes we'll be looking at are about two-thirds away across the page for the fiscal years 24 and 25. And then when we reference the tails, that'd be the second box for 26 and 27. Starting at the top of the spreadsheet, the target for the committee was $670 million above base for a total on line 11 of $1,003,188,000. Some change items at the high level that aren't included in an individual agency, you'll see on line 5, there's a transfer to the MLCAT from House File 410 of $29,055,000. There's a change in the distribution on line 6 of the lottery in lieu that we've heard several times. This would make the percentage go from 72.43% to just over 78%, and it costs $5 million in the current biennium. There's two bills that we're carrying money for, but the language and the appropriation are not in this bill. These ones were heard last week, the Drill Corps Library for $1 million, and then the $3 million for the White Bear Lake Water Use Area Work Group. Online, you'll see 9, you'll see a little bit of a change. It's a revenue from the state park permit revenue from general funds because there's sales tax on those. So in total, there's spending of $1,007,422,000. There's a little bit of savings in 23 from some cancellations of $4.2 million to get to the target of $1,003,000,000. On line 25, you'll see the total direct appropriations from all funds of $1,695,000,000. And then on line 96, you'll see the all funds spending, which includes the statutory and open appropriations of just over $2.5 billion. On line 49, we'll circle into the Pollution Control Agency. The total general funds appropriations from for the Pollution Control Agency are $233 million, and total directs from all funds on line 55 is $490 million. My page numbers might be slightly off, so if I mention flip to a different page, you guys might not be on the same page because I printed it off in a large sheet of paper. Starting on line 74 are the change items. In the highlighted boxes within each agency there are all the change items that were either proposed by the governor or in this bill or in both. As the chair mentioned, all the maintained current service levels that were recommended by the governor are included for each of the agencies. In total of the target money, that was just over $60 million in the current biennium. And then I should have mentioned the spending in the tails was $90 million above base, of which just over $75 million was consumed by the maintained current service levels change items. For the Pollution Control Agency, the general fund maintained current service levels was $1.55 million, and from all funds on line 82 was $22 million. You'll see on line 85, the general fund request for waters was included as a one-time appropriation. The resilient community grants and technical assistance was included at $20 million a year for the first 2 years. The governor had this at $173 million. You'll see on line 88, the Green Step cities are included at $380,000. The innovative solutions for managing, and that's one time, the innovative solutions for managing pollutants is included at $20,300,000, and again, that is one time. On line 92, you'll see waste prevention, and also like right below on lines 90 and 91, you'll see bracketed numbers. Those are a carve out of the appropriation above it for a specific purpose, including the taconite industry grants that the agency had proposed and then the applied research in waters. On line 92 is waste prevention reduction grants and loans. This is a governor's recommendation that's fully included at $26 million. And then it was written slightly different for a change item. There was SCORE block grant money included within that number, but I broke that out on the next line of $4 million per year from general fund for block grants. On line 94 is the technical assistance contractor for tribal governments. It's $4 million for the current biennium, and there are no tails for that. On line 95 is industrial facility air toxics criteria and emission reduction grants of $6.4 million. On 96 is the PFAS source reduction grants of $4.4 million. Again, that's one time. On 97, you'll see the county feedlot and SSTS program increase. This provides just over $1 million more per year to make it $3 million per year for the first 2 years, then it drops back to the base level. On line 98 is climate pathways analysis for $500,000. On 99, climate resources for environmental review is included at one time at $320,000. Line 100 has drinking water protection and PFAS response. This was the governor's proposal of $25 million and is included. The line 101 is environmental automation and modernization. This was the governor's rec of $35 million and is fully included. Line 102 is technical assistance for environmental review at $760,000 one time. The line 103 is air compliance equipment maintenance. It has one-time appropriation of $80,000. On 104 is accelerated pollution prevention at small businesses of $1.86 million, and there are no tails on that. The update to capital assistance program was not included. The MLCAT repayment you'll see on the top page. There's $2 million provided for plastics testing and protocols from House File 2126. When there was a House File that was included in the bill, I tried to include the House File number in the description so you know where that came from as well. On line 108, 109, and 110, there's three appropriations related to Representative Hansen's House File 955 for abandoned feedlots. That would be the financial assurance, the grant to delegated counties, and the grant to the county feedlot officers. And there should also be environmental fund appropriation and revenue you'll see later. The Swan Protection Act, get the lead out, was $1 million one time. There's line 112 is air emission permit modified, House File 672. There's also environmental fund revenue and appropriations. It's almost $1.2 million from the general fund. Line 113 is a community air monitoring pilot program of $5 million one time. On line 114 is House File 2171 for odor management of $500,000 and its ongoing appropriation. On line 115 is PFAS and firefighting foam, biomonitoring and protocols. So there's $500,000 one time, of which $250,000 can be transferred to health. On line 117 is House File 637 for cumulative impacts. This bill fully funds the language from the bill as introduced that was heard by this committee is included in the bill and fully funded. The first 2 years are from the general fund, the tails are from the environmental fund, and there's offsetting environmental fund revenue you'll see later as well. On line 118 is biofuel related monitoring for $500,000 per year ongoing, and life cycle analysis of $250,000 for biofuel monitoring. On line 120 is the wood dehydrator grant that was part of House File 2831 that was heard last week, I believe, for $4 million. There's PFAS water quality standards and PFAS rulemaking. This was a bill that's been heard a number of times for $155,000. Reporting fish kills in public waters is funded with ability to transfer to the other agencies to implement. Line 123 is the pesticide treated seed requirements that's fully funded at funds PCA's portion at 175. And then there's on line 124 a zero waste report for $680,000. On line 125, the zero waste program development and implementation. On your sheets, it might be missing a description. I think I accidentally removed that, but it's zero waste program development and implementation. It includes $2.4 million in the first biennium and then $1.6 million in the tails. On line 126 is the Pig's Eye Area Task Force at $140,000 per year. And then the governor had a solar energy equipment end-of-life management study of $420,000 that's included. In total, the new appropriations for PCA are $219.9 million. Going on to the next section, on 130, you'll see environmental fund changes. Most of these are at the governor's recommended level, but there are some additions and a few changes. The enhanced permitting, environmental review coordination is included at the governor's level. Technical staffing to implement Minnesota's PFAS blueprint is at the governor's level. Air appropriation increases at the governor's level. The hazardous waste and solid waste program staffing is $840,000 at the governor's level. The solid waste permitting program is included at the governor's level. The emergency readiness response staffing level increase at $840,000. The industrial stormwater and SSTS program staffing is $1.4 million. The county feedlot SSTS program increase of $440,000. The one change you'll see on 139 is increasing data management and data quality capacity. This starts in the second year instead of the first year. Line 140 is environmental career pathways is included at the governor's level, as is increased PFAS monitoring and the transfer to health out of that. There's 143 above ground storage tank fees. This is the appropriation for it, and there's also offsetting revenue. On line 144, you'll see the governor's recommendation for cumulative impacts was not included, but the appropriation for House File 637 is included. On line 145, the Minnesota Green Corps investment is fully funded at $1.3 million. The governor had a recommendation for financial planning and analysis that is not included in this bill. Line 147, the air emission permits modified. This is the environmental fund portion of the bill that I mentioned earlier at $554,000. Line 148 is the financial assurance agreements from House File 955 that I mentioned the general fund piece. This is the environmental fund piece of $1.68 million per year. There's House File 1315 for biodegradable and compostable labeling included at $35,000 the first year, or starting in the second year. Line 150 is the reestablishment of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency Citizen Board. Line 151 is the cumulative impacts that I mentioned earlier. You'll see no appropriations in the first biennium, but just over $9 million per year in the tails. On 152 is the air toxics emissions reporting and rulemaking at $1.4 million. PFAS and certain products prohibited. This is House File 1000 at $2.278 million for the first biennium and $2.23 in the tails. And then the governor's recommendation for lead and cadmium in children's products was included. In total, there's $38 million of new spending out of the environmental fund. Going down to 158, you'll see the remediation fund. The first one was a governor's recommendation that's fully included. The next one is a PFAS manufacturer fee task force of a $50,000 one-time appropriation. And then the petroleum tank release cleanup report is included at $76,000. There's two statutory appropriations the governor had recommended that are included on 165 and 166 for the uniform tools for brownfields program and the chloride training fee. And then on line 169 through 174, some changes that didn't have a direct cost but are included in the governor's budget bill, and all five of these were included in the bill. On line 180 are the revenue transfer changes. These include most of the governor's recommendations. The one I would point out that is different is there's a reduction in the increased transfer from the environmental fund to the remediation fund on line 153. And I have a typo in the governor's recommendation number. It should be 7 million in the current biennium for and the House has it at 6 million for the biennium, or this bill has it at 6 million for the biennium. 1 million less. Starting on line 190 are a couple of the House files that were included with have revenues. Line 190 is a disposition of settlement money where it would be a lost revenue that gets transferred to the health boards of just over $500,000 per year. The air emissions permits modified for House File 672, this is the offsetting revenue to the appropriation mentioned earlier. On line 192 is the financial assurance agreements, this is the offsetting revenue for the appropriation mentioned earlier. On 193, you'll see in the tails of the $9 million of environmental fund revenue related to cumulative impacts, and 194 are the air toxics emissions reporting and rulemaking at $1.4 million. I will start on Natural Resources Department next on line 197. Total general fund appropriations are $472 million. Total direct appropriations are $992 million. And total general fund, since they have some open appropriations that go through there, it's $541 million. You'll see lines 224 through 243 are the maintain current service levels recommendations that were fully funded out of the various accounts. And line 146 is the start of the change items. The increased mining regulatory capacity that the governor recommended was not included. There's modernizing broadband utility licensing for state lands and public waters. This was included at the $1.56 million. Addressing imminent safety needs at the Drill Corps Library. This was an FY23 change that the committee passed out, I believe, a week or two ago. It's being tracked on the high level and is not does not actually include the appropriation in this bill because it was passed out separately. On line 249 is protect and restore carbon storage and state administered peatlands for $1.5 million. That is included. There's line 250, protecting and managing water resources is included one time. On line 251 is another component of the one I mentioned above for utility licensing. On line 252, the planting tomorrow's forest today has $3 million per year for the first 2 years, but no tails. On line 253 is accelerated tree seed collection. It's at $1.6 million for the current biennium, no tails. On line 254 is enhancing community forests through the Minnesota Relief Program at $20 million. The governor had a little bit less than this. On line 255 is private forest landowner technical assistance cost share and inventory. It's a little over $4 million for the biennium. It's one time. There's $2 million for addressing state trail maintenance funding shortfall. This is one time. No Child Left Inside grant program has $1 million one time. Chronic wasting disease management through Fish and Wildlife Division there's a reduction being made in the 23 appropriation, and then there's new appropriations made of $700,000 per year for the first 2 years. The line 259 is investing in Minnesota wildlife and aquatic management areas. This line wasn't necessarily a change from the governor, but it's part of a Get Out More program you'll see down below. Line 260 is enhancing grasslands, restoring wetlands and WMAs for carbon capture and resiliency. This has an increase of $5 million, and later on you'll see Pittman Robertson related revenue for this. Line 261 is enforcement public safety preparedness. It has $360,000 for the first 2 years and no tails. There's $3 million for enforcement aviation modernization. There's line 263. This was the governor's rec of canceling $750,000 from legal costs and then reappropriating it in 23. Or from 23 to 24. On line 264 is digital DNR modernizing the customer experience, $3 million one time. There's a grant for Starry Stonework Community Invasive Species Containment of $900,000. The elk reintroduction bill of House File 1423 is included at $4 million. The rough fish report is included for $82,000. Swan Protection Act designations from House File 2368 was included at $1.4 million. The feral pig and mink bill had a report for $65,000. There's on line 270, the farm survey oversight transition. There's a cancellation being made in 23 and then a appropriation being made in 25 and then of $3.4 million and then tails of $1 million per year for this purpose. On line 271, there's neonicotinoid impacts in game species. This is $773,000. There's also a transfer being made in the trust fund portion of the bill to make it as full amount of, that was requested at just under $950,000. On line 272 is SNA funding of $6 million one time. Line 273 is the Great Cloud Dunes SNA acquisition of $6 million. On line 274, 275, and 276 are components of House File 2831 for the Emerald Ash Borer response, the grant for St. Paul Cogeneration Facility, and the school tree planting grants. In total is $37 million. Sorry, and the additional $1 million for the tree planting grants. There's $10 million for EAB hazardous tree replacement with climate-adapted species at state parks. There's a legislative report on state trails for $100,000. There's $5 million for the lowland conifer reserve, which was House File 2353. There's one-time appropriations of just under $20 million for the 1854 treaty appropriation. There's $5 million for the Upper Sioux Agency State Park land transfer. There's a small one-time increase for the Red River Mediation Agreement of $72,000. The Get Out More experience, modernizing the outdoor recreation experiences, was the governor's recommendation. This is this next category here. The enhanced access, the governor had at $28 million. This is included at $25 million. There's modernizing camping infrastructure at $4 million. The modernizing boat accesses was not included. Modernizing fish hatcheries and fishing infrastructure is $25 million. And then restoring streams and modernizing water-related infrastructure is $11 million. In total, there's $282 million of new appropriations to Department of Natural Resources. Starting on line 291 is the Natural Resources Fund. All of the fees for the DNR were included, including the state park, the boat fees, the AIS fees, and the fishing license fees. So you'll see offsetting revenues, and these are the appropriations related to some of those. Improving Minnesota water recreation experiences is just over $12 million. There's grants to county sheriffs of $360,000 per year. There's $1.1 million per year for AIS work. There's $450,000 per year for managing water resources and promoting them. There's new appropriations in here for increase from the lottery in lieu account for zoo grants of $260,000 for the biennium. There's local trail grants are increased by $160,000 per year. The appropriations for the Voyager Country ATV Trail and Prospector Loop Trails are included at $750,000 and $700,000 respectively. And then the improved visitor services at state parks is $3 million per year. On the next portion, you'll see the Game and Fish Fund. The investments in fishing are included at $1 million per year. Walk-in access program expansion at $400,000 per year. No Child Left Inside at $500,000 per year. There's $134,000 per year for native fish conservation. And then there's $300,000 for the first 2 years for shooting sports facility grants. On line 309, you'll see wildlife management area acquisition out of the RIM critical habitat account of $5.75 million one time. On lines 312, you'll see some statutory changes that the governor recommended. These are all included and they're related to the utility license fee, the state parks, and then the fishing investments. On line 320, you'll see the revenues and transfers. There's a transfer to the water rec account that's in statute that's being removed, and then there's for the non-game wildlife program and the Office of School Trust Lands for transfers. Under revenues, you'll see line 329 is the boat license fees of $14.8 million for the biennium, the AIS surcharge of $5.1 million for the biennium, the protecting and managing water resources, which is the water fees of $3.4 million, updating utility license fees for state lands and waters of $1.5 million. There's some revenue from the snowmobile registrations. On lines 334 and 335 are the lands bills, which were fully included as a governor's rec. Part of it was passed already in Chapter 9, and then the other one is traveling as a separate bill. On line 336 is the state park fee increases, general fund revenue of 420, state park permit fees of 5.2 million, and then the state park license plates of 600,000. On line 340, you'll see the reimbursements from the Pittman Robertson money for various expenditures that are being made under the chronic wasting disease management. I'll have to adjust these numbers a little bit, but it's $1.8 million per year. The investing in wildlife management areas is $2.25 million for the biennium. Enhancing and restoring wetlands on WMAs for carbon capture and resiliency has $11 million of revenue, and the maintain current service levels is about 1.6 for the biennium. There's also Pittman Robertson money that comes off of the RIM expenditure from the critical habitat account of just over $4 million that isn't currently listed on here. Line 345 are the fishing license increases. It's 6.1 from resident licenses, 5.2 million from non-resident licenses, and then you'll see a couple of the dedicated accounts under that. The turtle sellers license modification was included in the bill. It has a little bit of a negative lost revenue. And then you'll see on line 353 is the lottery and lieu distribution change. This would bring it, this is what I mentioned at the top of the page, which brings it just over 78%. It costs $5.2 million from the general fund, and then you'll see the amounts that get deposited in the Heritage Enhancement Account, the State Parks Lottery and Lieu, the Metro Parks Lottery and Lieu, the Local Trails Lottery and Lieu, and the Zoos Lottery and Lieu Account. On line 363 is the start of the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Total appropriations are general fund are $98,660,000. Line 370 is the maintain current service levels of $560,000 per year. On line 371 is the climate accelerated soil health practices was not included in here. There's new appropriations in here for the conservation reserve program state incentives of $5 million one time. There's $3 million for the RIM reserve program. There's the governor's recommendation of $17 million for water storage and treatment. Lawns to legumes program is included at $4 million for the current biennium and $500,000 for the tails. The habitat-friendly utilities program was not included in the bill. The habitat-enhanced landscape program was included at $4 million. The private lands, grasslands, working land restoration easements was included at $17 million. Private lands, peatland restoration for carbon sequestration is $7.5 million. There's $7.1 million for mitigation and resiliency for RIM easements. The support for tribal liaison was included at $260,000 for the current biennium, and it has tails. There's $200,000 one-time for the drainage registry information portal, and then there's a one-time increase of $1.25 million per year for the natural resources block grants. On line 385 is the Met Council Environment. Total general fund appropriations of $43 million. There's $9 million for modernizing regional parks and trails. There's $10 million for maintenance increase. There's $5 million for the mapping infrastructure, climate risk, and resiliency opportunities. There's $5 million for I&I grants with $1 million, $1 million carve-out for private service lines. And then on line 395, you'll see EAB hazardous tree replacement with climate-adapted species included at $9 million. There's a lottery and lieu account increase of $1.5 million per year as well. On line 398 is the Conservation Corps of Minnesota. There's an operational adjustment of $250,000 per year to bring them to a total of $1.4 million for each biennium. On line 405 is the Minnesota Zoo. Total general fund is just under $28 million, which includes the maintained current service levels of $6 million, the $850,000 for public safety and security. There's $250,000 for hazardous tree replacement with climate-adapted species, and there's a lottery and lieu increase of $65,000 per year. On line 419 is the Science Museum of Minnesota. It has a general fund appropriation just under $12 million. The operating adjustment of $300,000 for the biennium was included, and then there's one-time money of $9 million the first year and $450,000 ongoing for debt relief, employee retention, and temporary admission reductions. On line 426 is the legislature for the LCC to reestablish the Water Commission at $52,000 per year. On line 431 is the U of M general fund appropriations of just over $10 million, which includes $200,000 for the 50-year clean water plan, $3.5 million for the chronic wasting disease transmission contingency planning, and then $6.6 million for the AIS Research Center. Line 438 is Public Safety Department, and this is the appropriation they needed for the certain firefighter foam prohibited in House File 742. And Madam Chair, that gets me through the end of the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer. Ms. Taylor, would you like to go through? Would you like to go through your portion?
Sure, Madam Chair and members. Due to time, we're going to do things a little bit differently. I'm not going to walk through the text of the bill. I'm going to go through a little chart that should be in everybody's packet. Does House Omnibus Environment and Natural Resources Bill, H2310DE1, dated 11:46 a.m. from today. Hopefully everybody can find it. And it starts with Article 2 because that's where the language starts. And Article 2 includes House File 172, which was the LCCMR recommendations bill. It included the fiscal year 2024 appropriations as well as recommendations for capital projects. Everything has been included. It also includes some technical changes that were provided by the LCCMR staff. There was also a section from Representative Jordan's per diem bill that applied to the LCCMR that's included in this article. The additional sections are also included elsewhere in the bill, except for three that were included in the legacy bill, and those are being carried separately and are posted in that DE. There's also a new section that would reduce the supermajority requirement for LCCMR recommendations. It's currently 12, and it would be reduced to 11 in that section. And then next, in Article 3, this is the pollution control article. It includes House File 645, which was Representative Lee's Community Health Board's settlement money. This was modified from what the committee originally heard. There's some additional language regarding supplemental environmental projects. Just some clarifications there. Representative Hansen's microplastics definitions bill was included as it was heard by the committee. We've included the governor's budget item, the chloride reduction training fee. That would be section 5 in this article. Chair Hansen's biofuel wastewater monitoring section was included from House File 2761. I believe this is the only section included from that bill, as well as some appropriations that Mr. Hagemeyer mentioned. There's the PCA policy section for the water discharge notifications was included without change. Representative Hansen's pesticide treated seeds bill was included. There was some modifications made to section 44 that would state that the Department of Agriculture would not be hiring staff until after the rulemaking was completed. The governor's budget item that made changes to the paint stewardship program was included as the governor recommended, as was the changes to the competitive recycling grant program changes, and there were no changes from what the governor originally proposed. There's language from House File 2693, Representative Holland's zero waste grant program. The language is as it was introduced. The governor's budget item for the voluntary investigation and cleanup program account was included without change, as was two changes to reporting requirements applicable in the East Metro from the governor's budget. Those were included without change. Representative Purcell's House File 2076, reinstating the PCA's citizen for, was included without change. Representative Lee's cumulative impacts analysis bill was included. It is not what the committee originally laid over. It is the language as it was introduced. House File 673 was included, the air toxic emissions reporting. There were a number of modifications to this language. The odor management bill was included without change, as was the public meeting for non-expiring air permits, Representative Lee's bill. Two more governor budget items were included without change. This was the above ground storage tank fees, and there was a provision on environmental justice. A number of the governor's environmental justice pieces were removed in place of Representative Lee's, but there was one section that required some collaboration and consideration, and that was included, and that's section 32 in the bill. Representative Hansen's feedlot financial assurance and abandoned manure pit inventory bill was included without change. Representative Brand's House File 1000 for PFAS was also included without change, and I mentioned the per diem already. Move to the next page. Representative Purcell's compostable labeling requirements bill was included without change. The governor's budget item regarding the lead and cadmium, these were included. There was some additional language added at the request of the PCA to require a person to furnish additional info if requested, so that was an addition to what the as it was originally proposed. House File 7042, the firefighting foam bill was included. It was amended a number of times since leaving the committee, and those amendments are reflected in the bill. House File 674, Representative Lee's community air monitoring pilot program was included. There were some changes here. House File 1421, Representative Hansen's petroleum paint release cleanup program report is included without change. There's a new section 52 that would require PCA to put together a PFAS manufacturer fee work group that's included in this bill. And if you want to look at the language, it's on page 173. There's Representative Hansen's rulemaking regarding PFAS that was included without change. There's a new section 57. It's requiring a report on the path to zero waste. That language can be found on page 176 if you're interested. Representative Hansen included the governor's budget report on the recycling and reusing solar panels. That's included without change. There's a new revisor's instruction that was added at the request of the agency that would change master plan to plan in some statutes in chapter 473. And then the repealers from the governor's budget were included, and these included some PCA reporting requirements and some cadmium and lead provisions that were being redone as part of the lead and cadmium proposal. Article 4 is the natural resources article. It starts on page 179 if you want to look. The first section is from Representative Purcell's lowland conifer carbon reserve. That bill was included without any changes. The next section is a new section. It's a definition of restored prairie. The language is the same as the definition that was included in the Bowser policy bill that was heard by the committee. Representative Hansen's county board approval bill is included without change. The governor's budget item, the language for the utility licensing fees are included without change. Representative Hansen's snowmobile registration and decal bill was included. There was a technical change made to clarify how the new penalty or the trespassing penalties apply, so it did not apply to those walking. Representative Finke's insecticides on state lands was included without change. The DNR policy bill was mostly included. There are a few sections that were not included. I'm just, you'll see them listed out here. I'm not going to point them all out, but I'll just mention when there's a change that the DNR policy bill was mostly included. Representative Hansen's 2082, the AIS policy provisions was included. The governor's budget item that removed the transfer from the invasive species account was included. The Loose Line State Trail bill was included. The governor's budget state park fee increases section was included. The governor's budget watercraft licensing fee increases. There's a number of sections here, and they were all included. House File 949 with the watercraft operator safety training requirements was included, all those sections. The governor's budget language increasing the watercraft surcharge was included. Representative Finke's House File 2831 with the EAB response grants was included without change. Moving to the next page, House File 2368, the Minnesota Swan Protection Act. This was included. There was a change to narrow the designated protected areas to only those within the 7-county metro area. House File 1654, Representative Freiberg's bill with the big game licensing loophole closure, that was included. As mentioned, the governor's budget from the fishing and spearing license fee increases were included. There's a number of sections there. Representative Vang's turtle sellers license bill was included without change. The DNR policy provision on ground blinds was changed from what was in the DNR policy bill. The ground blind would need to be blaze orange instead of being able to be blaze orange and pink. Moving to the another DNR policy provision, the Phelps Hold Waiters. There were some change, some technical changes made, and then it was delayed to become effective January 1st of 2024. Representative Myers, waste on the ice bill, instituting some penalties was modified. If you remember, there was a $25 fine. It has been increased to $100. Representative Hansen's House File 1680 with a sustainable diversion limits was included without change, as was the DNR Enforcement Authority bill. Representative Georgian's fish kill bill was included. There was one change made to clarify that the fish kills would not include anything that was lawfully taken under the game and fish laws. The governor's budget item increasing the water use permit fees and the summer surcharge was included, as was the state park licensing fees, section 109. The lottery and lieu distribution increase was modified to reflect the percentage that Mr. Hagemeyer mentioned. There's a new section that would require the DNR to report on the OHV trail in Houston County. It's on page 238 if you want to check that out. And then another new section was state park license would require the DNR to conduct a state park license plate design contest. That's on page 239. The Upper Sioux Agency state park transfer was included. There were some modifications made, mostly to address the Minnesota Historical Society. There's a new section that would require a report on enforcement officer bargaining unions. This is in replace of Chair Hansen's House File 2833. There's one section from Representative Hansen's feral pigs and mink bill requiring the report that's included without change. And Representative Georgian's native rough fish was included without change. And then there's a new section requiring the DNR to report back on state trails. This is on page 242 if you want to check that out. Moving on to Article 5, this is the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I mentioned the per diem was included. Representative Hansen's House File 1828 was included as it was. This also includes House File 1498. Representative Purcell's bill, though. There was a provision that was in both bills. House File 207, the lawns to legumes that passed the House is also included. The language is the same as is the drainage registry portal. This language is the same as was in House File 2354. Article 6 is the Farm Survey article. This is essentially the second engrossment of Representative Beckerfin's 1202. I believe there are some additional amendments that have been adopted since then. And then Article 7 is miscellaneous provisions. It includes a number of provisions, all without any changes. The Legislative Water Commission, some sections from the pesticide treated seeds, the pesticide city ordinances, the inflow and infiltration grant program, and then the 50-year clean water plan scope of work.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. And I see that Mr. Hagemeyer has some more to add.
Madam Chair, I apologize. I was so excited to be done with the first spreadsheet, I forgot there was Article 2. But this one will be very fast. It's the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. It's House File 2310, DE1. This is Article 2. This is House File 172 as it was passed by the committee, and I believe it's on the General Register now. You'll see two changes on line 97 of that spreadsheet, line 98, you'll see the administrative budget went up by 133,000, and then the emerging issues account was reduced by the same amount to reflect the actual budget of the council. And then on line 113 and 114, you'll see there's appropriation for restoring upland forest in the laws of 2021 that isn't going to be used. So this is capturing the 176,000 that's remaining for that and putting in towards the neonicotinoid impacts and game species that I mentioned in Article 1. That's all, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer. Representative Hansen, before we go to public testimony, is there anything you would like to add?
A lot of people on the list, so why don't we hear from them?
That is true. We have a lot of people on the list. Testimony will be limited to 2 minutes per person after we are done with the agencies. But first on my list is Commissioner Stroman. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner. Please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Perfect. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Sarah Stroman. I'm the commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to testify on the House Environment Omnibus Bill. I want to thank Chair Hansen and the committee for bringing this bill forward and putting this bill together. Earlier in the session, I was here, I laid out the governor's priorities and the agency's priorities as they pertain to the Department of Natural Resources portion of this bill. Those priorities were connecting people to the outdoors, and in particular, our Get Out More, modernizing outdoor recreation experiences. This initiative is intended to be transformational and comprehensive in its nature. And just as a quick reminder, we've actually created a new little handout, which I believe folks have. And the goal of this is just to give you a sense of that comprehensive nature, that if the goal is to maintain and provide modernized outdoor recreation experiences, we need to look at all of the components that contribute to those experiences. So this shows one example in our fishing experiences. We need fish production. We need places to fish, that being whether you're fishing from a boat or whether you're fishing from shore. And we need sustainable fisheries management. And so all of those components were part of that Get Out More proposal and are reflected in this bill. The second priority is to mitigate and adapt to climate change. The governor's proposal largely tiers to the climate action framework that was developed with much input from Minnesotans. And with respect to DNR, our priorities are really focused on initiatives that maximize carbon storage, maximize our investment in lands that the state of Minnesota already owns and that are managed by the Department of Natural Resources. Our third priority was to manage natural resource issues like chronic wasting disease, like aquatic invasive species, our water resources, fisheries, to manage those issues proactively. And finally, the fourth priority, to address the agency's operational needs. As I believe you've heard in the walkthrough and from the introduction from Chair Hansen, those priorities are largely reflected in this bill. There are just a couple things that I would note. I think the one notable exception is the general fund contribution to public water accesses. And then this bill provides additional funding beyond what we requested, additional investment in trees and chronic wasting disease. With respect to the policy and policy fiscal items in the bill, the agency has testified throughout the session on those individual bills, so I'm not going to repeat that testimony here. I believe we're on the record on those items. And with that, I'll just say we look forward to continuing to work with Chair Hansen and the committee on this bill through the remainder of the session, and appreciate the elements of our priorities in the governor's bill that are in here. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next on my list is John Jashke from the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. And then on deck is Tom Johnson from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. John Jashke, Executive Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. And we also appreciate the opportunity to work with the Chair and the committee on the various parts of the bill that reflect our agency's responsibilities and programs. As you know, our programs are delivered largely through local governments, and so it's important that those parts of the bill work well for them as well. And I want to appreciate thank the chair for including a provision that would allow us to work with the tribal organizations of Minnesota with the inclusion of a tribal coordinator position that would remain in the base going forward. As was mentioned by Commissioner Stroman, there are several pieces in this bill, of course, that have a connection back to the Climate Action Framework, which the agencies and Minnesotans worked on over the last year and a half or more. And there's several pieces that are included in there, including this biodiversity component that we heard about already, that have been previously funded through Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund. So turning those into programs, I think, is really important and noteworthy. The one noteworthy omission I would highlight is that the component that the governor's recommendations included revolving around soil health was not in the bill, as was noted by staff. We appreciate the inclusion of the statutory program language, which will help us down the road with that program when and if the funding is made available. And as I mentioned to the chair this morning, it's really important that we do our utmost to bring available federal dollars into Minnesota that are newly available. And I appreciate the language that the bill includes to acknowledge that. And so we'd like to spend weeks ahead working with the chair and others to try and reinstate that provision and work with the committee and others on other parts of the bill. So thank you for that opportunity, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next on my list is Tom Johnson from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and then we will go to public testimony. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Johnson. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. For the record, my name is Tom Johnson, Government Relations Director for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I want to thank you all, and first of all, I want to pass along Commissioner Kessler's thanks to Chair Hansen and the committee for the important work this year so far, and her regrets for not being here today. The commissioner really appreciated the opportunity to present to the committee earlier this session on the governor's priorities for the MPCA, and we're very pleased to see many of our shared priorities reflected in the DE1 amendment. I'll briefly touch on a few of these items as they relate to the commissioner's and the agency's top priorities. The PFAS provisions in the DE1 amendment are a great example of how the legislature and the administration can work together on a topic to address critical needs across different areas. The bills that restrict PFAS uses, of course, will reduce the amount of PFAS entering into our environment, while the governor's proposals will ensure that we're investing in mitigation strategies and building up the agency's capacity to properly address these difficult contaminants. On climate, overall, this bill represents a significant investment in reducing greenhouse gases, helping our communities adapt to a changing climate, and giving the agency the tools we need for the work ahead. As we move forward through the process, Commissioner Kessler would like to continue conversations with the chairs about additional funding for the Resilient Communities Grant Program and other climate pieces for DNR and Bowser that are grounded in the Climate Action Framework developed by the Interagency Climate Change Subcabinet and reflect the input of thousands of Minnesotans. Finally, transparent and accountable services is another great example of how the legislature and the agency can work together on ideas. There are many important policies in the DE1 that originate from the legislature and direct the agency to address disproportionate impacts, create new expectations for us. And there are several agency proposals that will also help us to increase transparency. This is also paired with the investment that we really appreciate in staff that the chair mentioned earlier, that we need to do the work that Minnesotans expect of us and that is required under federal and state law. There is some funding that we propose from the general fund for our water programs that we'd also like to work with the chair on, seeing if we can fit that in the tails, although I know that's challenging. But overall, thank you to the chair and to Chair Hansen and members of the committee for their collaborative work on this important shared priorities this year. We're looking forward to working together where there may be opportunities for improvements, clarifications. We're happy to stand for questions. Thank you all.
Thank you. Next on my list is John Severson from the Science Museum. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is John Severson. I serve as the Director of Strategic Partnerships and Government Relations at the Science Museum of Minnesota. I will first share regrets from our president, Allison Brown, who is returning home from visiting her 95-year-old mother. She wished to be here but is in transit. Madam Chair, we are here in support of the DE1 amendment, particularly line 5423, which details an appropriation to the museum totaling $11,900,000 over the coming biennium. Madam Chair and members, we last appeared before this committee on February 15th and shared the significant budget shortfalls our institution faces in closing out fiscal 23 and looking forward into fiscal 24. We ask for this committee for consideration of significant one-time support, which would pay down existing debt, improve our operating cash flow, and better position the organization going forward. And I am here to say thank you for hearing our concerns and taking action necessary to safeguard the future of one of Minnesota's most admired and most visited cultural institutions. While the museum only learned of the appropriation amount yesterday, the leadership team is working on a budget framework to account for the additional $9 million appropriation in fiscal 24 and $450,000 in fiscal 25. The remainder of that was existing in the prior bill, as recommendations from the governor. Per our request in February and in accordance with the bill language, the corpus of the funding, roughly $8 million, will go to retire a significant portion of the museum's $12.3 million debt. We are still assessing the cost savings on this pay down with our lender, but anticipate a significant cash flow improvement, which will allow us to fulfill the intent of the bill language. A second priority will be the retention of current staff. We have often appeared before this committee and talked about the beautiful facility we have in St. Paul, But the greatest value of our organization lies in the talented scientists, educators, and exhibit designers who bring scientific exploration to life for hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans annually. In addition to retention, the museum will be able to rehire positions across the museum impacted by the unwelcome but necessary round of layoffs completed on March 14th. These initial retires will include visitor-facing staff, many of whom are BIPOC employees just beginning their museum careers. The third and final priority of the funding will be to make the museum even more accessible to Minnesotans with limited resources. With fiscal 24 funding and fiscal 25 allocations, the museum plans to make its access programs from free and reduced to free for qualifying visitors. As we rebuild attendance, we anticipate this will provide cost-free museum or omni-theater experiences for nearly 60,000 employees annually based on fiscal 19 utilization. This program, which is currently underwritten primarily by the museum's general operating budget with some funder support, represents nearly $1.3 million in retail value, and this appropriation will ensure cost-free access to those Minnesotans who need it most. On behalf of the board and staff of the Science Museum, I want to reiterate our sincere appreciation for the action taken by this committee. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Next on my list of testimony is Lucas Franco from LIUNA. After that will be Doug Carnival. I will be keeping time, and an alarm will go off when 2 minutes has elapsed. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Franco. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Jordan and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Lucas Franco. I'm here on behalf of LIUNA Minnesota and North Dakota, a union of more than 14,000 proud men and women who build and maintain our state's critical infrastructure. We believe the state has a responsibility to support communities impacted by more frequent storm events, and want to thank the committee for their support of investment in stormwater infrastructure to help combat the effects and the worst impacts of climate change. We also want to thank Chair Hansen and committee members for their commitment to environmental justice. LIUNA takes environmental justice seriously and supports action to ensure that communities of color, low-income communities, and immigrant communities are not disproportionately burdened by pollution. We have historically supported the investment of both public and utility ratepayer dollars in efforts to address sources of pollution that produce disproportionate burdens, and we welcome the inclusion of a grant program to reduce air emissions within EJ areas of concern. At the same time, we're concerned that the cumulative impact provisions in the bill directed at environmental justice could have significant unintended consequences. While well-intentioned, we believe that these provisions could result in the loss of family-supporting jobs in communities where they're badly needed, potentially worsening the environmental health burdens that the bill seeks to alleviate. For example, LIUNA recently analyzed EJ data covering Northeast Minnesota and found that the most significant problems facing communities in the region was not air or water pollution, but low household income. Unfortunately, as currently proposed, the cumulative impacts policy could exacerbate their socioeconomic burden by eliminating or preventing the creation of new family-supporting jobs. Elevated levels of pollution are associated with poor health outcomes, and if we want to improve the quality of life for communities burdened by racism or poverty or both, we need to take the socioeconomic consequences of permitting decisions just as seriously as the environmental consequences. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Doug Carnival. After that will be Tony Close from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Could we have some of the same testifiers come tomorrow, because I'm going to have some questions for them?
If testifiers want to be asked questions, they can come back tomorrow. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Carnival. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Doug Carnival of Grand Chia Carnival Law Firm, representing two different clients today. One is the National Waste and Recycling Association, and on their behalf, I want to express some gratitude on the increased and ongoing SCORE block grant funding that is being provided in this bill. We have supported that for many years, and counties are the appropriate people to distribute that that money, and increases will be very much appreciated. Secondly, we want to support the MPCA's recycling market development program as a means to develop more end markets for recyclable materials. So thank you for that, Mr. Chair. Thirdly, we do have some concerns about the unidentified funding for grants and loans for food waste reduction and food waste prevention and reduction. We continue to have concerns about the lack of transparency with projects, what projects are funded, and whether they may result in competition with already existing public and private partnerships. And lastly, the amendment allows for rulemaking, which would increase the total amount available for projects from the current $2 million per county to $5 million per county, and that might have impacts on the private sector investments that exist today, since we might be competing with multiple county projects, each of which would be entitled to $5 million. On behalf of the Irrigators Association of Minnesota, I just want to mention that we continue to have concerns about provisions in Article 4 of the bill that deal with new enforcement provisions that the DNR would have to deal with water use and overuse and permits. They contain potential criminal penalties and substantially more penalties that exist right now. Good news is we're working with the DNR right now and the author of that provision, Representative Kozlowski, to see if we can come up with some solutions otherwise. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your time. Next on my list is Tony Quillis from the Minnesota Chamber. After that will be Brian Martinson from the Association of Minnesota Counties. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Quillis. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And I want to preface my comments today by talking about that it is a priority for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce to protect the environment and natural resources of the state of Minnesota, as well as the health of its citizens. But I'm not going to mention all the provisions that are included in 2310 that I've testified against previously. But my main concern is when you take all the provisions and add them together and take them as a whole, they send a concerning message to the business community, including our agricultural community, our natural resources industry, and our manufacturing sector, as well as any businesses that are looking to expand or locate here in Minnesota. Our businesses mainly compete in a global economy, and with all the provisions in 2310, we as a state have the potential to miss out on future economic development opportunities that benefit our communities as well as our state's economy. The three main concerns I hear from our members all the time are time, cost, and uncertainty in dealing with environmental permitting and environmental review. And unfortunately, many of the provisions in this bill will add more time, add significant costs, and create, rather than eliminate, uncertainty. So the business community strives to be always in compliance with state and federal laws. But provisions in this bill will create substantial challenges for us because there's numerous undefined and ambiguous terms and requirements in here. We're going to keep working with Representative Hansen, other stakeholders, and state agencies as this bill moves through the process. But again, make sure to protect the health of our citizens and our natural resources, while also ensuring that we can still pursue economic development, growth, and investment in our state.
Thank you. Next on my list is Brian Martinson from the Association of Minnesota Counties. On deck is Nazir Khan from the EJ table. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Martinson. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Brian Martinson. I'm the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Analyst with the Association of Minnesota Counties. We appreciate that the committee received a healthy amount of one-time funds and a much narrower ongoing target. We appreciate the funding that has been included in this bill across a number of areas, including natural resources block grant, county feedlot program, feedlot training, SCORE grants, repayment of MILCAT, county septic system programs, as well as the mentioned investments in EAB, AIS, and PFAS reduction. Of course, in most cases, these are only one-time appropriations, and we hope that the committee will consider opportunities to extend these to base investments. For many of the programs I've mentioned, I would love to tell you more about how those impacts your communities through health and safety of people and the environment, but please know that these dollars are spent well. I would like to address a few items where we have recommendations or feel additional work is needed. We appreciate the chair's interest in reestablishing order management authorities included in Article 3, Section 25. This is a complex issue and challenging to implement. The language includes a list of facilities that would be exempt from these requirements, and we'd appreciate further discussions about considering solid waste management facilities which serve a public interest. We have concerns with the removal of land acquisition procedures that are contained in Article 4, Sections 3, 4, and 125. State land acquisitions impact communities, changing land use opportunities, and local tax base. We would like to continue to work with the chair on how these issues are addressed in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on my list is Nazir Khan from the Environmental Justice Table. Not seeing him. I have Caitlin Bemis from the Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation, and after that will be Chris Cowan from the Pesticide Action Network. As you approach the table, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself after you've settled in, and then proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Bemis, and I'm the Public Policy Specialist at Minnesota Farm Bureau, where I have the privilege of representing nearly 30,000 farmers and ranchers from across the state of Minnesota. As we discuss today's proposed environmental budget, I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the great responsibility our farmers and ranchers carry with them every day as they feed, fuel, and clothe our world. Of the many layers that responsibility has, stewardship of the land is the utmost important to my membership. With this importance in mind, I would like to discuss several provisions included in this committee's budget proposal, several of which the Minnesota Farm Bureau has had the opportunity to previously comment on over the course of this legislative session. We are concerned by the inclusion of funding for the Drainage Registry Portal. Farm Bureau is a permanent member on the Drainage Work Group, and I have been attending those meetings. The work group has been making progress on this issue, and I firmly believe that we could come to consensus given the opportunity to do so this summer, giving everybody a seat at the table. Additionally, funding for the reinstallment of a citizens board at MPCA is a concern to my members. As MFBF has shared through testimony in this committee, we do not believe this board is necessary and trust the wisdom of the 2015 legislature's decision to disband the board. We believe the vital decisions the MPCA makes every day regarding permits and other processes that farmers rely on should be left to the professionals at the agency without the disruption of a citizens board to overturn science-based decisions. Moreover, we are concerned by the inclusion of language for the increased regulation of treated seeds, a vital tool for our farmers who utilize these products to lessen the need for sprayed pesticides. As the committee heard from the agriculture community as recently as last week, we are weary of regulatory burdens that will disrupt our farmers' abilities to have access to and utilize these seed products. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and we look forward to working with this committee on these important issues.
Thank you for your time today. Next on my list is Chris Cowan from the Pesticide Action Network. On deck is Rick Horton from Minnesota Forest Industries. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Cowan. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for taking time to hear my testimony. My name is Chris Cowan. I'm a contract lobbyist with the Pesticide Action Network and working with the Minnesota Environmental Partnership Pollinator and Wildlife Cluster, and also with Midwest Farmers of Color Collective. Just want to say thank you to the chairs and members for all the time you've taken to put this bill together. There are several things in the bill that I want to say thank you for. And the Lawns to Legumes program, which has been very popular and is great for creating habitat for pollinators, and also keeping in mind that one of the largest irrigated crops in the United States are people's front lawns. So using habitat that's friendly for pollinators is a great way to go to forestall all that irrigation. The DNR game species money that replaces LCCMR money for studying the impact of neonics on prairie chickens and deer is an important study. There are neonics in deer spleens from one end of the state to the other. This is a situation that's well worth investigating and getting answers to. It's great to see the DNR insecticide language in the bill that disallows the use of highly toxic classes of insecticides on land that should be safe for our pollinators and vital insects. The treated seed language, I don't think really interferes with farmers' abilities to have access to these seeds. It mostly focuses on their disposal. And this is still an issue of great concern. And thank you for the local control language. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. Next on my list is Rick Horton from Minnesota Forest Industries. Up next, I understand Patrick Murray and Ashley Brunholt are coming up together. You are on deck. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Horton. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And committee members, my name is Rick Horton. I'm the Executive Vice President of Minnesota Forest Industries. Thanks for the opportunity to testify here today. First off, I'd like to thank the committee and Representative Hansen for the forestry funding in this DE amendment. There's great funding in there for forest roads and bridges on both state and county lands, money for reforestation, and money to increase DNR's capacity to do private lands forestry management. However, we are concerned that the lowland conifer carbon reserve is still included in this bill in an unchanged condition. Forest management is based on science. Folks go to school to make decisions on when forests should be managed and in what manner they should be managed. And many studies are out there showing that locking up lands from management is not a good strategy for carbon management. And therefore, this bill would actually not accomplish what it's set out to do. Also in January, the Department of Natural Resources presented to the legislature a report entitled Forests and Carbon in Minnesota, Opportunities for Mitigating Climate Change. It provided three main pathways for increasing the role of Minnesota's forests in mitigating climate change: retaining forest cover, increasing forest cover, and managing working lands to sequester and store more carbon. You notice that that does not say lock up land and do not manage it. Minnesota Forest Resources Council also recently commissioned a study to determine the baseline carbon flux in forests and life cycle analysis of carbon throughout the entire forest. That's key information we're going to need as we manage our forests for carbon and climate change moving forward. So our forest management decisions balance ecosystem services like wildlife habitat, recreation, water quality, carbon absorption and storage, timber supply, and scenic beauty. It's inappropriate to manage our forests for just one of those ecosystem services and focus entirely on it. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Next up is Patrick Murray from the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers, and then on deck is Ashley Runholt. Feel free to grab the chair next to Chair Vang if you would like to sit up there as well. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Murray. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Patrick Murray. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. Thank you for the opportunity to provide some comments today here. We know that you put a lot of work into putting this bill together, not only the members but also the staff, so we can appreciate that. We wanted to share our thoughts because we only have a few brief minutes, but wanted to focus specifically in on the inclusion of the language that would regulate the use, storage, disposal and sale as a pesticide-treated seed, as well as a requirement for certain label statements for certain pesticide-treated seed, and the requirement of the creation of consumer guidance regarding the proper use and disposal of treated seed, which is a mouthful. So joining me today to talk through that with you, to hear from a retailer's perspective, is Ashley Runholt. Ashley is on our board of directors for the Crop Production Retailers. She comes from Cottonwood, Minnesota, and is the sales agronomy sales director for her local cooperative. So with that being said, I'll turn it over to Ashley.
Hi, Ashley. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Ashley Runholt with Cottonwood Co-op Oil Company. There's a couple of things on this bill that raise concern to me. To conserve time, I'll mention two of them. One is adding seed treatments to the fields adjacent to state-managed ground. Approximately, I just did some rough numbers, that would be equivalent to about 544,000 acres that would no longer be able to be in corn production because we're not able to get untreated corn seed in the state of Minnesota. So that is alarming. So how I came up with those numbers roughly is I did four fields. That is assuming four fields around each outdoor area. And there's 1,703 sites in the state of Minnesota. And then I assumed 80 acres per field. So it's a pretty conservative assessment. It's probably much more than that. That would be immediately taken out of corn production. And then that would also include sugar beets. And then any other pre-manufactured treated seed. The second part that I would like to address is the labeling requirement. Because of the dicamba restrictions that we had, where Minnesota got a supplemental label, the ag retailers were responsible for distributing that to the growers, and that's a much larger scale than what the bee icon would be. So in contents for our location, that would be around 10,000 bags that our agronomists, which we only have four of, would be responsible for relabeling those, in addition to the current seed labels that are required on those. So on larger retailers and larger seed dealers, that could be on average up to 20,000 plus bags every year that they would have to basically just staple a bee icon to. If I've got more time.
Wrap it up for me.
Okay. To kind of wrap everything up, as a farmer's wife, we're an emerging farm, and I've been in ag retail for about 16 years. We try to do our best, and we try to follow the IPMs and BPMs that the state of Minnesota provides to us and the federal EPA. By no means are we trying to contaminate anything or harm any animals. That's our ground that we're around. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your time. Next on my list is Kyle Makarios, and then on deck is Doug Franzen. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Makarios. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Hansen and committee members. My name is Kyle Makarios here on behalf of Mining Minnesota. We are the trade association representing Minnesota's non-ferrous mineral exploration and development companies. And we recognize that a transparent, robust, and thorough regulatory process is essential as we seek to responsibly mine the critical minerals that our state and nation must have if we want to achieve the carbon reduction goals that we all share. Mining Minnesota is concerned that a few of the provisions in this bill will inadvertently hamper our nation's efforts to produce a domestic supply chain for these critical minerals without significantly providing a public benefit or protecting the environment. First, we oppose the recreation of the MPCA Citizens Board. The scientists and experts who work at the MPCA and other state and federal regulatory agencies, we believe, are best equipped to evaluate any permit proposal, and there are already many opportunities for the public to engage, become informed, and provide input on any proposal. Secondly, we are concerned with provisions that create a new cumulative impact standard for air pollution. We believe there's a lack of clarity in the definitions provided in these provisions that will create additional uncertainty in the permitting process. And our third concern is with the lowland conifer carbon reserve that has been proposed. As it currently is proposed, there's not an exclusion for mining activities. The establishment of this reserve could impact privately or other state-owned minerals, and the impacts on these parties have not been accounted for within this proposal. Minnesota, in summary, Madam Chair, Minnesota already has a very rigorous and thorough process for evaluating proposed permits. It is important to our members that the process also be transparent, predictable, and provide certainty about what is required to get a permit. These proposals detract from those goals, and we would respectfully request that they're removed from this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on my list is Doug Franzen from the Minnesota United Snowmobilers Association. On deck is Christopher Lenkowski. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Franzen. Please state your name for the record. And
thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Doug Franzen. I'm here representing the Minnesota United Snowmobilers Association, and our message today is simply to say thank you. We want to thank Chair Hansen, members of this committee, and the good folks at the DNR. This bill includes some administrative modernization and clarification that will facilitate lawful snowmobiling, registered snowmobiling, It contains a provision that will make snowmobiling safer and that also provides enhanced protection for our volunteer landowners who let us use their fields. A particular shout out to the DNR because we've worked on these provisions for some time, too long in my mind, but a very thorough and deliberate process, and we come to you today with their full support for these provisions. And with that, again, I can't say it enough. Thank you.
Thank you. And then last on my list is AJ Dewar. First on my list is Christopher Lankowski, and then last on my list is AJ Dewar. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Lankowski.
Yes, yeah, you got it. Thanks, Madam Chair and members. My name is Chris Lankowski. I'm the Director of Park Operations at Ramsey County Parks and Recreation. I'm here to represent the 10 implementing agencies of the Metro Parks Regional Park System. We're often called the state park, the state parks of the metro area. We're a place where people come to celebrate a marriage or the death of a loved one, where you can go and have a beautiful hike in a natural area. We're a place where Minnesota homegrown gold medalists come to train, and a place where your baby can take their first steps. The investment is huge because we have 64 million visits to our regional park system in this last year. And those 64 million visits mean that our park system is being loved to death. The operational and maintenance dollars that that this committee is providing gets us a lot closer to that 40% of the funding level that's required, and that plus the lottery and lieu funding does that unglamorous but vital work of cleaning toilets and mowing lawns and fighting invasive species, and that's the stuff that helps make sure that the parks are safe and clean for people to come to. And the modernizing funds, the one-time funds, can be really important for us to be able to react to flooding that is impacting our parks, providing accessibility to people with disabilities, converting some of our trails to permeable pavement, which helps water quality. All of that is really important to coming into the next century of park modernization. Our parks are anywhere from 50 to 150 years old, and we need those modernizing funds to make sure that we keep up our facilities to be in great shape for the next 50 to 150 years. And then finally, with the Emerald Ash Borer investment, you know, you can't have a lot of fun in a park if you've got dead trees and limbs falling down. So that's incredibly important to keeping people safe and being able to enjoy the park. So overall, your investment has a huge impact, and we're just very grateful for considering our proposals. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on my list is AJ Dewar. Welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andrew Dewar, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Pork Producers Association. And I'll be very quick as a late addition to the agenda. We appreciate the many conversations that we have had with Chair Hansen and other members of the committee and look forward to continuing those conversations. But at this time, I'd like to share our concerns with a couple provisions. First is Article 3, Sections 33 and 50. That's the Financial Assurances Bill. We believe this bill will cause significant financial hardship to our farmers and is unnecessary, as we do not believe that there are any abandoned feedlots over 1,000 animal units. I do want to say that we're not opposed to the portion of the bill that creates an inventory of abandoned feedlots, and that might be a good step to start with. Second is Article 3, Section 17. That's the creation of the new Citizens Board, or the recreation of the Citizens Board. This would add another step at the end of a long, difficult, and expensive process, and the new board could then deny a permit for any reason. And last, Madam Chair, if I could quickly take off my pork producer's hat and put on my Minnesota Biodiesel Council hat, we'll talk about Article 3, Section 6. This is the requirement for biofuels plants to continuously monitor for PFAS and neonics. And Minnesota's three biodiesel plants aren't really sure how they even accomplished this and think that this is an unnecessary burden. So hopefully that was quick, and I really appreciate being a late addition and look forward to continued conversations. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? Welcome to the committee. You have 2 minutes. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, Chair Hansen, and members of the committee, I'm Brenda Hartkopf with the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association. I also own Splendid Ridge Elk Farm in Howard Lake. My comments pertain to Article 6 of this bill. Making farm survey premises location data available to the public, CWD is such an emotional issue for everybody. I'm convinced that if this language passes, it will result in violence to anyone who finds a CWD positive animal on their farm. Whether it's to themselves, their property, or their animals, it's going to happen. Requiring a physical barrier between farm cervidae and free roaming cervidae for all cervidae owners. I have 40 acres fenced, so double fencing is my only realistic option. It recently cost the DNR $200,000 to put up a 13-acre fence, and my fence is three times that size. Yes, there's possible reimbursement program, but is it still tens of thousands of dollars out of my pocket to do this? There hasn't been a CWD positive elk in Minnesota for 14 years. There's only ever been one red deer, no reindeer. This mostly unfunded mandate would collectively cost these herd owners hundreds of thousands of dollars. The proposed restrictions on importing semen are so severe, there are no options left for us to bring in semen, which we utilize to create genetic diversity in our herds. In my herd, this is what I use to, so I don't have to bring in live animals as biosecurity for myself. There's never been a documented case of CWD being spread through semen, either on the farm or experimentally. And thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against this bill? We will save member questions until tomorrow. I did want to make, which is when we will do markup and take member questions. So if there was a request for testifiers to come back tomorrow to, if there are member questions, I would also ask that members hang on to your spreadsheets and your tax paper for the bill, just to save time for our staff that have to print all this. So you can put them in the save folder in your packets. And again, the amendment deadline is 7 p.m. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And then, Mr. Chair, is there anything else you'd like to add before we adjourn?
Should we do the minutes so we've got those?
Oh. We actually, Chair Lee moved the minutes and they were approved already. So that has been done. That is the only official action taken today. And I believe with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.